You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with A.K. Dolvin, and she's talking to me from the Arctic Circle, which we'll discuss a little bit. A.K., thanks so much for being with me today.
Yeah, hi.
So,
I'm actually above the Arctic Circle. Yeah.
You're above the Arctic Circle. So let me explain this, because I looked out on the map a little bit, and I know you're at the top of Norway, above the Arctic Circle. Can you just describe a little bit, like, what it's there now? Is it really cold? And what is it like around there? I know there's Aurora Borealis probably this time of year. I'd love to hear about what it's like to live in this town.
Yeah, you know, it's really far north. It's much further north than Iceland even. And if you go that far south on the globe, you can't live there. But due to the Gulf Stream, we can live up here on some islands called the Lofoten Islands. And my home and my studio is on the north side of the island. So I face, from where I'm standing now, a huge horizon. And if you continue, if the globe hadn't been round, if you look straight ahead, Greenland is the next land from here. It is dark just now. It's the evening. But we have, the sun has come back. It's been away for 6 weeks. So we have lovely, beautiful colors from 7, 8 in the morning till 3, 4. And then the days get longer and longer each day. And soon we have the sun day and night. But this time of the year, it's not like the night all the time. You have this incredible indirect light. And, of course, you have the Borealis light, and stars and moon is very important this time of the year.
So let's talk a little bit about that kind of light. I mean, artists are in different parts of the world. I know you're also in Berlin and London as well as here, but there's different parts of the world that artists go to experience different kinds of light, right? Like in Greece or a lot of different areas. And light is a very abstract thing to talk about, but where you are now, I imagine, is, besides a place that you spend a good portion of the year, also very unique in terms of making art. And whether it's like video or installation or paintings you're working on, I would imagine there's something kind of very unique and hard to describe. So what I'm asking is, can you talk at all about like the light there, or at least how that kind of atmosphere, which seems really kind of magical to me, how that affects your work, or at least describe what it's like as opposed to, let's say, London?
Well, in a way, light is also about time, you know. It's about the passage of time. And I like these seasons that you're more, it's darker some parts of the year, you're more focused, you do more reading, and then you're out there a lot when it's more light. But it, in a way, this place has become part, really like a studio for me. It's a space I know really well. And because it's so open and so naked in many ways, well, if I work with a theme that has to do with the world we're living in somehow, and if I work on it here, I realized it becomes more more visible in a way, because it's not so many other things that disturb. So something, I can have a concept and be in my studio in London and think of it, and then in the end perhaps I film it or shoot a photo here, even if you don't see the mountains and the sea, but it's something with the passage of time and the quiet place and this huge view that makes me focus. And if I work with a team, if we're here, you know, you can't just pop down to a cafe and have a takeaway or anything like that. So if you work here with a team, my experience is that we get a lot out of it when we do a project here in such a place. We have 9 people in my village. And I was in the shop today. It's 8 kilometers away. But the sea is front of the house, and my freezer is full of fish, and we have what we need.
Amazing. Yeah, 9 people is certainly a very small village. They must know you well. When you talk about, you know, even collaborative projects that you've done there, or videos. And I know a lot of the work is about balance, and we're talking about different cities. In New York, for example, because there is so much busyness and space is so precious, people tend to build things that are, you know, artists that are either small or that are easily disassembled or assembled. And maybe we should just talk about when you worked with a team there on your island. Is there a feeling that's more expansive in terms of space or the balance you talk about, or sensitivity to the world? If you want to talk about a video project you did there, is there something about that space that allows you kind of more breathing room that would be evidenced in the video, for example?
Yeah, I can talk about one work, actually, because the same work is going to the Armory in New York now in March. And it's a work called Ahead. And it's actually, perhaps as an interesting example, I had this concept that I wanted someone to carry a body without the body touching the ground, but with feet first. The person is not dead or anything. It's just that friends that carry you ahead, but actually with the feet first. And I thought, no, I do this in Brussels, because I've never been to Brussels and see what happened. I did the project there. We crossed the street and trams, and it was a very urban space. And when I saw the work, it felt like, is this my work, really? It felt more like Arnold Mick or other artists I know work more urban. So I was really interested to do the same thing here, with the same group of young people carrying the same young woman backwards here in the winter. So we were like 12 people in the end with a team and everybody, and I asked them to dress warm, but quite ordinary, like if they're in a cold city, and they were from Spain, Russia, different parts of the world. And we did the same thing, but here on a very steep, snowy hillside. And of course, the whole concept with taking care and love and carrying someone, they had to brush the snow away, keep the person warm. Many things that happened in the city was just so much more visible and stronger, and you could catch the idea much better in this white, snowy hill. And that then it became really clear for me that this space, it's not about, you couldn't see the mountain and the landscape, but it was, you could feel the steep hill and the snow. And the people that were part of this said, why can't we just do it in Switzerland or, you know, somewhere else where there's snow? But no, I traveled all the way here because we can stay in my house. It's nothing else that disturbs. It's not a hotel. We cook over meal. We talk together and so on. So it's about a friendship, being together in a special site. And this site creates such a dialogue, which is from project to project, which been something happens between us when we work in such a spot, even though in the end you don't see the midnight sun or the mountain or the sea. I hope you get me.
I do. That's very interesting. And of course, yeah, I can imagine, especially a project like that, taking on such a different tone and feeling there. So I'd like to also talk about your paintings, you know, but maybe before we do that, I know you're working on now, because we've talked before, but also this idea of balance, you know, as we talk about different areas, London, Brussels, and your work addresses, you know, as you've said, balance in the world. Can you explain what you mean by balance and what you mean by being out of balance? Yeah.
You know, often they ask, oh, what are you working with? And for me, it doesn't help to say film or video and painting. I think what I work with is, in a way, for me to find balance in the world we're living in, both personally balance, political balance, social balance, you know, all what's happening now in 2017 as well. How do we deal with all this? And then I use different media. And that's kind of a key thing, both ethically, aesthetically, and, even to get the poetry into that politically, to look for the balance in the world we're living in. And just now, actually, I had built a new studio here, and I've been working very intense until today. I cleaned up everything with some large kind of painting on anodized aluminium that has a rainbow effect on them, and the only thing there is a kind of a line or a horizon that tilts slowly. It's called the horizon out of balance 3.2 centimeter. The next one, horizon out of balance 6.2 centimeter. The third one, horizon out of balance 9.4 centimeter. And here I work with a huge, huge horizon in front of me, but I'm not painting, of course, figurative the horizon, but it's something with its space. And, you know, we believe the horizon is straight. And I think in 2017, where are we going? What does our horizon look like? Is our horizon in 2017 out of balance? It feels like that. And then this place is a very good spot to think about these things, the world we're living in. And just now I do it in these large 250 by 250 paintings, 2 meter 50 by 2 meter 50. Because I'm working also on a retrospective coming up in a few years. Norway, finally, we have a Museum of Contemporary Art, but we haven't had a good building. And it's a new, wonderful, wonderful building we will get in about 4 years. And I feel very grateful and happy that I'm one of the first artists there to have a retrospective, which is actually where I am now in my life feels right. I started late with doing art. I was 34. Now I'm 63, and it feels like, yes, now, AK, you can. It's very interesting to look back and also look ahead, and I'm working on this, a very big show there at the moment.
So when you look back and ahead to talk about that, and that is very exciting to have that retrospective, you know, you're at a point in your life and your career where you can see yourself developing and how you've developed as an artist and where you'll go to. And perhaps in the context of balance, or it could even be in terms of medium, when you look back on this and begin to prepare for the retrospective, what do you see in the arc of your career as you've grown and raised a child and exhibited all over the world? What do you see, or what are you pulling from that you perhaps wouldn't have seen 10 years ago?
Well, I just started to really look back and work with my archive. I always just looked ahead and, you know, I wasn't that really interesting in looking back, but it is actually very interesting. As a very young artist, I, among other things, was very lucky to get a residency to Berlin. I just finished my studies. I had a five-year-old daughter, moved to Berlin. It was still the wall for 2 years, and then the wall came down. So it was politically a really interesting time to live in that part of Europe. The 90s in Berlin was fantastic. It was hardly any commercial gallery, but art was, they supported art a lot, and a lot of interesting artists came to Berlin. Now it's more and more commercial, and I feel I've been lucky that I grew up in a country like Norway, where, in a way, we didn't have much commercial galleries, but we had residencies and grants supporting artists. And I can see the result of that. The Scandinavian or Norwegian, we have lots of good, interesting artists because they had the possibility to develop with the funding. And my experience is that, I mean, to be an artist, it's a life project. It's not something I do short-term to earn money. And if I can't earn money on what I'm doing, I had other jobs, but now I can live on my work, but I'm very grateful that I had this possibility as a young artist to get the start with grants and be able to go abroad. So my life is always returning here to the Arctic, but I lived more or less 10 years in Berlin and 20 years now back and forth between London and here. Because I'm sure you understand, in a village with 9 people, you can't just, you know, who just be here. Although, I must say, it's very interesting. I discovered the last year that creators or collectors, they are interested to come here, actually, and see, even if it's such a remote place. I think perhaps these mega, mega events like art fairs and so that people meet the same people and the same kind of landscape and these places now. It's not about, you know, in the 80s one talked about periphery and center. What is periphery? The center is where I feel, where the onlooker or the viewer stand in front of the artwork or hold the work or hear the work or listen to the work. That's the center. So that can be many places, and that's a beautiful thing with art. It can cross borders and cross language and be in many places. I mean, I grew up, you know, it was New York, London, and then Berlin came. But I think it's happening. I know it's happening a lot in South America. It's happening a lot in India and many other places of the world. It's happening a lot here. We're now starting a residency project in Spitsbergen and even further north than here. So I think it's a really interesting time for art these days. Although commercially it's hard, or we have the mega, mega, mega galleries that have this takeover or so. But that's a healthy thing, that art will always survive, and we have these mega, mega things. And then I think in the backwater of that, a lot of interesting things are happening other places now in contemporary art.
It's true. We hear about new residencies in different places, and you're saying there's one even further north than where you are. And so, I mean, you're saying that in terms of the artists and the art world, it sounds like you're saying there's more possibilities and there's continued growth in the nonprofit world of the arts.
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely. I think that a reaction to the mega galleries now, you know, these super big galleries that have one gallery in New York, one in London and Milan and Hong Kong and so on, you know, that's a market. It's something else, you know. It's really not about, it doesn't have, that's not about finding the balance in the world we're living in and have art as a tool for that. That's about money. It's about something else. And it's dominated by special artists. It's very male-dominated and so on. So, but that's so visible. It's so there. So I think it's happening, actually. What's happening for the future is not there. It's happening a lot many other places these days. I just came back from Brazil, and that's also very hard time financially, politically, but in terms of contemporary art, it's happening a lot.
It's interesting. And to say one more thing about your retrospective, you know, I know this is in the future, but if we can imagine individuals, people, Norwegians, from people from all walks of life walking through your retrospective, you've told us a little bit about the trajectory of your life. How will they look at the series of work that you've done over the course of 30 years? Will they see a narrative there? Do you believe there'll be a kind of narrative? Is it just a collection of work that's kind of talking to one another? Or will they see your growth as an artist? And if so, how would that read visually? Or what do you think people will understand from that? Or what will the narrative be, if that's not too difficult?
I don't know yet. You know, I'm working with the curator, and at this stage we talk to each other about life and thoughts, and I think we will see after a while which route it will take. But I mean, I love Tate Modern in London. They have beautiful retrospective, and personally it means a lot to me to be able to enter an artist's life and see career over a long time. I find that really interesting. You know, we have artists today, they have a very short career, sell a lot, and that's it, and then it's over, you know. But these life projects, where people have been living through different personal stages, but also political, you know, I find it very interesting to read an artist's projects related to time and the years and what happened in the world when you go and look through a retrospective. So So I've seen many wonderful retrospectives in Tate Modern the last years. And what I will do in 4 years or so, it's not decided at all yet. Just now I'm discovering myself things, earlier things that I see linked to what I'm doing now. And that's really interesting for myself. And let's see. It's very, very early to talk about that. But the contract is signed and it will happen.
That is exciting.
Yeah.
So what is happening next is you're having a show of paintings now. Isn't that what you're preparing for? If so, could you tell us about that or
it
no?
It seems like I will have a solo show it seems like in London this year in my gallery there. And it's a beautiful space, Wilkinson Gallery. So I'm just now working on that, which probably... It's also a large 16-meter long projection, 1 meter high only, with several people involved and a composer and a performer. So it's hard to explain, but it's many of the same people that actually were in the work ahead, carrying the girl up in the snowy hill. So
there'll be a projection in that space and also the paintings that you're working on now, perhaps?
It's a work called A Other Teenager, not another. I know it's wrong to say A Other, but is that probably, and we're working on it. It's not 100% decided. And these very, very large new paintings, some 5 meters tall. So let's see, it's a beautiful space. I love that space, the Wilkinson Gallery in East London. It's very inspiring. But it's not all decided yet. I'm working on things. And then I'm just now really working with some group shows. And I also tend to lately, the last years, and have quite a few permanent works. I'm working on a sound work for a chapel up in the mountains in Austria. Runkweil, I'm going there next week. So that's really interesting too. I think that's fascinating to work with permanent works in different parts of the world. And there I tend to have done quite a few sound projects. Among other things, the work called Untuned Bell, which I've done in different countries, based on, I found... in England now, I have on a 500-year-old bell that was removed from a bell tower in the church because it didn't fit sound-wise with the voice didn't fit to the other voices. So what I did, I got a new clapper, like a tongue in the bell. So I got a new clapper in it, have it high up in there between two pillars. They are 20-meter steel pillars, 20 meter tall, 30 meters apart, and between there is one bell hanging. But the onlooker can sound the bell themselves. In one place I used a rope, another I used to rebuild the Jimi Hendrix Crybaby pedal as a switch. And so, you know, a bell which is out of tune on its own is beautiful on our own when you don't compare us with someone else. That's in a way also a bit political work, but very poetical as well. But it was really interesting in England, that old bell. It was very hard to borrow it. But I finally got it up. Busloads of people came from the village to listen to the sound of the bell because their great-great-great-great-great-grandparents had heard that sound. And that's amazing. It taught me a lot how emotional sound is as memory. I mean, this is long before photography, but they could think, oh, that bell sounded when my great-great-great-great-grandparents were married. You know, so I find to work with sound lately has also been very much inspired by this experience, what sound, original sound means for people as a memory, or make images even with sound in your head. You have sound, you make your own images. Oh, I could have a
That's
whole
true.
lecture
Seth,
about that.
yeah, tell me, because it's true. Sound has all these associations, even more than smell, perhaps, with memory and history and all these associations that you say we normally make, right? With different sounds.
Yeah, I find that. That's opened a whole new. I work quite a bit with sound lately. Also, natural sound, just echo from the mountain or just voices. Like I did a work with Giorgiorno. It's called Ja, As Long As I Can. It's just his voice and my voice, where we just say Ja for 20 minutes. And those two, male, female voices, different age from different country, when you put them on top of each other, it creates images. And this is performed then in a theater or a cinema where you don't have any image. It's just a sound from Giorgiorno's and Eke Dolan's voice. I thought people would walk out the first time I had that performance, but it's 20 minutes, it's from a vinyl, so you feel, you know the length of it. A white vinyl with a spot on which reflects on the closed curtain, so you can actually see sound in a way. But you don't see any image, but you make images just from the two voices. And that piece has been actually very successful and shown in many countries. And then I just walk in, put the vinyl, white vinyl on the white vinyl player, and it's Giorgiorno and me saying, Ja, As Long As I Can. Which, of course, is
Yeah,
also.
the sound is a very beautiful, beautiful subject, and I love that piece. Will you be working with sound in the future? Is that part of projects you have going on now, as well as the shows you're preparing?
I always, since my studied work mixed with, I will never say I'm a painter or a video artist. I actually, from day one, I come from the music scene. That's how it started. So I always worked with different material, different medium, and I'm not the expert in any of them. And if I don't know anything about 35 millimeter camera or a small digital camera, I get someone to help me. But I know what I want, but I choose different equipment and different material depends on different concepts. And earlier when I started, that was like you were not taking serious in a way, but I'm today, it looks like very many artists work like that, and that's my freedom, and I'm very happy that I continue doing that. I don't feel stuck at all in any medium or any idea because I change that all the time. But again, to find balance in the world we're living in is a kind of a pillar, I think, in whatever medium I do.
I think so too. I think that's enormously important. Before we go, I want to ask you, it's been wonderful talking with you. What book or books you're reading lately? I always ask people at the end of the interview what books they're reading, and I'd love to know if you'd share that with us, what you're reading now.
I'm really obsessed about Clarice Lispector, Brazilian artist, modernist. I tend to, if I travel to a place where I haven't been before, I look for contemporary writers from that country. I think that's an interesting way to understand and learn about the place. And in this case, I was in Brazil last year, and now again, and Clarice Lispector, she's an amazing modernist writer. And now I have five small books of her, and now I have a collection of her short stories. And I know it's a very good biography about her as well. So Clarice Lispector, Brazilian writer, with her mother came from Russia and was raped by soldiers or Uzbekistan, I think it was, and died from disease. And the father of Clarice Lispector moved to Rio with Clarice, and I think also a sister, I'm not 100% sure. So she kind of became Brazilian, and I realized that she also has been very important for other artists. So the whole modernist movement, both in art and music, and as we know, architecture and literature, is new for me, but that's very strong in Brazil. So, yes, Clarice Lispector.
Hey Kay, I want to thank you for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure talking to you from above the Arctic Circle.
Nice to talk to you. Have a wonderful evening there.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.